My name is Rajesh Ramamurthy. I'm a program manager in Visual Studio Team Services team. My team actually builds some of the shared components for Visual Studio Team Services. Some of that includes the identity stack, the authentication stack, the authorization stack, some of the commerce that if you go to Marketplace or visualstudio.com, you know, we enable the commerce behind that. Some of the user management activities that you see in Visual Studio Team Services is actually built by my team. You know, it's always exciting to be the last session, you know, last session in a big conference. You know, the first sessions are exciting, the last sessions are also exciting. I'll try my best to make sure that, you know, the next 75 minutes is exciting for you. So first, I want to talk about this cloud thing, right? Everybody is talking about this cloud thing. You know, 2-3 years ago, when I was in a different team, you know, our VP came to us and said, hey, you need to move, you know, at least half of your assets to the cloud, you know? We need to bring down some of the operating cost. And in some cases, you know, we need elastic, you know, computing. You know, there are scenarios in the past where we actually have to go increase our hardware capacity. And believe me, we have to plan that 6 months in advance. So, and there comes the cloud thing. Cloud gives elasticity. You can go from, you know, 2 VMs to 20 VMs, you know, within a minute. And you can come down from, hopefully within seconds, so. And when you don't need that, you can come down from, you know, 20 VMs to 2 VMs. You know, you only pay for what you use. So everybody is excited about the cloud. But at the same time, everybody has this question. Okay, if I go to the cloud, an on-premise, you know, my servers are in a data center that I manage, or my team manages. For some teams, you know, practically if you have on-prem TFS, your servers are just around the corner. Practically, you could go hug those machines if you want. But would I get the same level of control if I go to the cloud? So hopefully today we can talk about some of the enterprise controls that VSTS offers today. And if you're one of the customers, you know, who's already on the cloud or who is thinking about moving to the cloud, moving to adopting team services, or if you're one of the customers who are like, I'm not sure if the cloud thing is really for me, right? So hopefully, you know, this session can give you a visibility to some of the controls that you get and you gain when you move to Visual Studio Team Services. A second part of this session, I also want to show you, okay, so we can talk about a lot of enterprise controls that you have. That's great. Can you show me a real-life example? Well, the answer is yes. So we can show you how our team, Visual Studio Team Services, actually use VSTS for our application lifecycle management. And third, let's say that if I give you enough information to say, yeah, now I'm kind of moving from, I'm a skeptic, and now I'm moving to a quadrant where I'm ready to do that. How can I do that? How quickly can I go get set up a team services account, and how quickly can I become productive? So hopefully, you know, we can also talk about that. So how do we do this? Well, we don't do this alone, and we can't do this alone in a cloud world. So we provide the necessary set of enterprise controls that you need to secure your assets by working with Azure AD. And we know that, we know what is important, you know, what's the most important thing to you, which is your source code. We want to give you the tools and the processes that you need to protect the most important thing, that's your source code. So what kind of enterprise controls does Azure AD has? The first thing is, you know, we still live in a world where we don't have everything on the cloud, and that's probably going to be a while before we get to see everything on the cloud. What does it mean? It means we have a lot of on-prem resources. We have a lot of on-prem services. But at the same time, companies have started transitioning to the cloud. So you have now cloud services. You have VSTS. You have Office 365. All right. Now I need to access both my on-prem resources and cloud resources seamlessly. I just don't want to use a domain name slash username, you know, one identity to access my on-prem resources and use another identity to access my cloud resources. Think about that. It's a management nightmare. Even for an individual, you need to remember, you know, two passwords, you know. So how can we solve the problem? We can solve the problem through Azure AD Connect. Through Azure AD Connect, you can sync and you can integrate your on-prem Active Directory with Azure AD. You can sync your user identities. You can also sync your groups and group memberships. You can set up bi-directional sync. Any updates you make on-prem get synced to the cloud. Any updates you make in the cloud get synced to on-prem. By doing that, you can use a single identity to access your on-prem resources as well as your cloud resources. What more we can do? Well, we live in a world where just usernames and passwords are not sufficient. You know, you read about this in newspapers, you read about this in magazines, you know. Different security threats, different security incidences, hacking incidences, not just private individuals, but state actors are trying to get into your data, trying to steal your data. So you really have to protect your users from themselves. Your passwords are no longer sufficient. There comes the support for multi-factor authentication. With multi-factor authentication, you can set up a second layer of security. And there are different ways where you can set up multi-factor authentication, starting with simply getting confirming through a text message, through your phone, to receiving a call and entering a PIN, or using an app. And if you have some of those biometric devices, like I have an iPhone, so anytime I get a multi-factor authentication prompt, all I have to do is simply go and provide my fingerprint, and I'm authenticated. So definitely, you know, as an increased security, you should look towards setting up multi-factor authentication. So third one is, great. I have connected my on-prem AD to Azure AD. I've set up multi-factor authentication. What more can I do? I need more granular level locking down of my resources. With Azure AD conditional access, you can actually do that. You can set up in a way that you can say that, hey, I will only allow access to my cloud resource if an individual belongs to a specific group. Or you could say, if you come from a specific device and if your device is only registered, then I would let you access your cloud resource. Or you could even lock down to device platforms if you're accessing only from, let's say, hey, if you're coming from an Android phone, and this is my policy. If you're coming from an iPhone, this is my policy. If you're coming from a Windows device, I can set up a different policy. In addition to that, with conditional access, you can also look at some of the risk events, activities like unusual sign-in. You know, somebody is trying to sign in, you know, three times, and you detect that, and you can enforce a different set of requirements for that. And some other requirements that you could roll out is, hey, if you come from here, if this is your condition, I will allow you. For example, if you are trying to access our cloud resource from my corporate network, I will not enforce multi-factor authentication for you. I'll allow you. But if you come from outside the corporate network, I am going to enforce multi-factor authentication on you. Or I am going to enforce that you actually go register your device. So with Azure AD Enterprise Controls, you have multiple tools to secure your assets. So what do we have in VSTS? Well, let's take this scenario, right? Most of the companies, you know, they have their own provisioning tools, your HR tools where a new employee comes in, you go through a provisioning process, and then eventually, you know, you go create an account for that employee in Active Directory. With Azure AD Sync, and if you have set up Azure AD Sync, you can leverage your existing HR tools to provision new employees into VSDF. And if you have set up Azure AD groups, if you are using, if you have Azure AD groups, and if you have set up Azure AD groups in VSDS, new users can gain access to VSDS by simply joining that group. And, okay, so when the user comes in, you know, I get this new employee, get access to VSDS quickly. Now, at the same time, when the employee leaves the company, deprovisioning, I want to make sure that I protect my assets quickly. So when employee leaves, when the identity gets disabled in Azure AD, within an hour, we disable access. We disable web access in VSDS. If you have alternate credentials that that identity, that individual has set up, let's say basic authentication, PATS, personal access tokens, we'll disable all that. Access management, as I said, the quickest way for a new person to gain access is through Azure AD groups. Either at the VSDS account level or VSDS team project level, we have what we call system groups, and I'll give you an example of that. At a team project level, we have project administrator, project contributor, and project readers. And all you have to do is go set up permissions on these system groups, and you are free to go create your own groups. And simply, you know, add your Azure AD group as a member of this group. You don't want to go, permissioning is a hard thing, especially when you want to scale your service to hundreds of users. It's difficult. You know, you can go and set permissions on individuals. The way you can scale is simply, you know, providing access, providing permissions at the group level, get the Azure AD group as a member of that group. Immediately, you know, any members of the Azure AD group gain access to VSDS. And if you remove them, the same way they gain access quickly, they also lose access. In addition, if you're an administrator, you can lock down some of our security and app access policies. You can decide, you know, who and what gets access. We have, and we'll talk about some of those policies in a moment. So what are the app access policies do we have in VSDS? So alternate authentication credentials. So why do you need that? Especially if you're using Git command line tools. You know, you can use the OAuth web flows to authenticate the user. So you need something else. And this is where basic authentication comes into picture. You can go into VSDS. An individual can simply go and create a username and password, and they can use the username and password from some of the command line tools like, you know, Git command line tools to connect to, you know, repos in VSDS. You can also use the username and password to access a rich set of REST APIs that VSDS has. We do enforce strong password. But generally, you know, anytime we talk about passwords, you know, we know it's not as secure in today's world. So basic authentication is considered, definitely considered less secure than personal access tokens. The next policy is you can also allow, if you're building applications that need access to VSDS REST APIs, and you can actually register your app through our OAuth flows. And through that, user can allow your app to access VSDS REST APIs. And you can also configure the scope of, you know, what access that, you know, you want to provide. It is very similar to you using, you know, a Microsoft account or a Facebook account to access an app. You can specify, you know, what level of access that you want to give to this app to do on your behalf. The third one is SSH authentication. And if you don't want to use basic authentication or personal access tokens, you can go create a public-private key. You can keep the private key with you. You can upload the public key in your VSDS, and you can use that as an alternative to basic auth and personal access tokens. You do need to have a separate URL. You could go get that in VSTS if you're using SSH as your authentication method. Personal access tokens, what are they? They are an alternative to basic authentication, especially if you're trying to authenticate from non-web flows. How can you go create a personal access token? You can go to VSTS. Each individual can go to VSTS, can go to security and create a personal access token for himself or herself. When you create a personal access token, you can specify a time range for the personal access token. You can also specify, you know, what is the scope of this token? Do you want to give this token access to everything in VSTS? Work items, version controls, source code, builds? Or if you want, you can also go set up granular access to that personal access token. But our recommendation is you can create as many personal access tokens as you want. There's no limit to that. But our recommendation is you do want to limit your personal access tokens. You do want to keep it secure. The token is you, you know. Anybody who could get hold of the token can talk to VSTS like you. Well, it's basically you. It's another version of you. So if somebody could get hold of that, they could impersonate and they could access your reports and they could get access to your source code. Security policy. Today we have only one security policy that you can find, which is what we call external guest access. Many customers, you know, I've been talking to customers, you know, the last few days in the conference and outside. Many of them brings this scenario, which is, hey, I'm working with a partner outside my company, and I need, and my account, you know, is connected to Azure AD, and I need this partner access my VSTS resource. How can I do that? Well, if you're not in the directory, you can get access to VSTS, especially if your directory is backed by, if your account is backed by a directory. But you can invite partners outside your company as guest users to your directory. There are two ways you can do that. You can use some of the existing Office 365, you know, flows. But if you simply go and share a document with somebody outside the company, that email address, sign-in address, will get added as a guest user to your directory. Another way you can do that is if you can go talk to your Azure AD administrator and say, hey, I need you to invite this Microsoft account, or I need you to invite this user from another Azure AD as a guest user to my directory, so I can give this guest user access to VSTS. For you to do that, you need to enable this policy that says external guest access. If you disable the policy, even if those users exist in your directory, they won't be able to access VSTS resource. So you as a customer can decide what granular level of security and access policy that I want to set. If you are a guest user, your access is very restricted. You can browse the directory. You can find other people in the directory. You can work with anybody who is already in the VSTS account, but you can go and add somebody else from your directory to the VSTS account. There are some limitations there. So what's our security model? Well, if you've been using TFS, you know, our on-prem product, you're well aware of some of this. There are controls exist at every level, at the account level, at the team project level, as well as at the team level, where you can decide, you know, who gets access to what and what they can do with that. So two groups, they're really important, actually. The first one is Project Collection Administrators Group. This is a group at the account level. And members of this group can perform all operations. They can rename your account. They can delete your account, actually. So, and I've seen instances in the past where customers, you know, when we talk to customers, there are like, you know, 50, 60 people in Project Collection Administrators, you know, So you really want to restrict this group because anybody who is a member of this group can potentially go, you know, do a lot of damage, you know, either knowingly or unknowingly. At the same time, I have also seen the other side, where there's only one person who is a member of this group. And here's what happens in that case. The person who is a member of the Project Collection Administrators group is also the owner of the account, and the person leaves the company. Other people can get hold of the account, and you have to talk to us to help you with that. So not too little, at the same time, not too much. Like the same thing, you can also go and protect your team project at a more granular level. You can decide, you know, who's going to be the team project administrators, who's going to be the readers, contributors. You can go set up that granular level of permissions and memberships to manage your assets. Again, you want to restrict membership to, let's say, the team project administrators group, because once your team project is deleted in VSTS, it can be undone. So you need to really keep it secure. Shifting a little bit to talk about what are the data protection guarantees, what are the guarantees that we provide to our customers as a service? VSTS is hosted entirely on Azure. It uses all core Azure services, whether it is compute, storage, whether it is blob storage or SQL storage. We use the identity and access management of Azure, aka Azure AD. We use Service Bus. We use all of the core components of Azure. We use federated authentication model with Microsoft accounts and AAD. We never store your credentials. We never store your username, password, credentials, unless you go and create your own alternate credentials. But your actual company credentials, we don't store it. We use the OAuth flows when you come to VSTS, and if you're not authenticated, based on if you are trying to access a VSTS account that's backed by Azure AD, we send you to Azure AD. And you actually authenticate there. And once your authentication is done, you'll come back to us with the claims. And the claims will tell us that Azure AD has successfully authenticated you, and now we know who you are. And similarly, you know, if you're using a Microsoft account, we send it to the authentication, you know, endpoint of Microsoft account. Mostly, it's like login.live.com. And you authenticate there, and then you come back to us, present your claims, then we know you. Data availability. Okay, so we don't store your password credentials. Great. What is our data availability guarantees? Well, we leverage and we really depend on the great availability guarantees that Azure provides. So Azure actually stores, you know, three copies of your data within the data center. And you must have heard about this already. Not only that, they also replicate that to another data center within the same region. So practically, you have six copies of data. We also take, since our database is SQL Azure, you know, we also take daily backups. In addition, we also take point-of-time backups of Azure blobs and SQL DBs. In fact, that if you go and delete an account, within 90 days, if you come back to us and say you want to restore back that account, we can restore everything. We may not be able to keep your account name. If somebody else have already claimed, you probably will lose it, but you will gain everything else, and you can claim a new name for your account. Our service availability guarantees. How do we ensure that our service is up and running all the time? How do we protect our service? We leverage, to protect against denial of service attacks, we leverage Azure DDoS protections. In addition to that, we have our own throttling. So if we see that somebody is trying to accidentally or trying to overview VSTS resources, we throttle you down, thereby ensuring that any misuse or overuse of resources is not impacting other customers. We have a 24/7 live site response. The moment there is an incident on the live site, within minutes, there's going to be a service blog is going to be updated, and there is a service status page where you can go and find frequent updates on what's happening with the service and how quickly we can resolve that issue. And we do guarantee 99.9% availability for our paid users. For some customers I've talked to, they're like, this is all great, but my company insists that your service need to be certified. We do have a bunch of certifications. ISO 27001, we have European Union model classes. We are also actually working to get FedRAMP certification, especially if you're a federal government, you certainly need this before you can move some of your assets to VSTS. So we are working on that. So here are the controls we have. What can you do? Well, first, you can classify your data. We don't know about your data. You know your data better than anybody else. You know what happens if this data leaks, what's the impact to your business? You know better. Within Microsoft, we are a huge software shop, and a lot of our product groups and IT groups have been moving into VSTS, but we don't have everything in VSTS. We do the same thing. We classify our data. We decide whether it is ready today to put that on the cloud. So I recommend that you do that. Adopt Azure AD and leverage some of the controls that we talked about that comes with that. If you're a company that really cares about security and protecting your assets, do not use consumer identities, because you don't have control. Companies and enterprises don't have control of consumer identities. The consumer identities belong to consumer. Yes, you can go set up multi-factor authentication on consumer identities too, sure. But companies can't do that. Only the individual can do that. So you have no control. I see sometimes that companies actually go create Microsoft accounts that look exactly like your work accounts, and they use it. Not a good way, not a good policy, actually, because you might think that, as a company, you own those identities. You actually don't. The individual owns it. And most likely, the individual is using their consumer identity for other things outside your company, too. Use multi-factor authentication. And in fact, when we rolled out multi-factor authentication a few months ago for most of our cloud services, we have had our challenges. Sometimes I've been asked to authenticate again like 10 times a day. It's annoying, definitely. But I think some of those issues have been ironed out already. But I certainly, recommend you use multi-factor authentication. To reduce the impact of MFA, multi-factor authentication, you can use PINs, Windows Hello. Windows Hello is a nice way. And if you are in Windows 10 and if you got one of those new devices that supports biometrics, it's even great. Because I have a laptop, I have Windows 10, and it supports Windows biometrics, Windows Hello for Enterprise. It just looks at me, it's funny. Every time I open the laptop, it looks at me and it logs me in. So you can certainly reduce the pain with some of that. And please do use BitLocker, because most of us actually, clone the repos to our local machines and we take the local machines home. You do not want to lose your machines. When you lose your machines, you can protect, you can put all the controls on the cloud, on the access. But if somebody has a bunch of source code on their machine and if they don't protect their machine, you're still going to have the same set of challenge that that you have in protecting your cloud assets. And limit the use of basic authentication. We know that, you know, today, especially command line tools that does not support OAuth flows, you know, you have to use some other type of authentication. But I would recommend don't use basic authentication. Use PATS. PATS are definitely more secure. You can, because once you create a PAT, I don't know if you have tried creating a personal access token. Once you create a PAT, we'll display the token for one time only, and you have to store it securely. And we don't, and next time when you go and try to access your token, it's not available. We don't actually, it's only one time only the token is. So it's really secure. All right, so we have a bunch of controls. So we talked about how we can use Azure AD, how we can use, there's great things in VSTS, you can lock down your access, great. Is there a real world example? Is somebody doing it? How are you guys doing it? This is a question I get asked most of the times, you know. How is Microsoft, how is VSTS team doing it? Hopefully I can share some of how we actually use VSTS today. A little bit of history in Microsoft. For a long time, our source code lived in Source Depot, which is a version of Perforce and TFS for a long time. What does it mean? Well, if you are within the corporate network, you can access the source code, no problem. If you're outside the corporate network, you need to VPN. This is becoming a challenge as we go through, as we have gone through our transformation and really becoming an agile company, you know. The solution that we, you know, is VSTS. You don't need VPN to access VSTS. Better developer agility. But we at Microsoft actually require, you know, unconditional multi-factor authentication. We don't care whether we are coming from within the corporate network or outside the corporate network, we have a multi-factor authentication enabled. So how do we do this? Well, the VSTS is developed and managed in VSTS, which means we leverage all the controls, all the recommendations we give to our customers. Our VSTS accounts, our official VSTS account, we also have a bunch of personal VSTS accounts to go test and try out things. They're all connected to Azure AD. Our IT department has set up an Azure Connect between our on-prem AD and Azure AD. So we use a single identity, and I use a single identity to connect to my corporate network, access the corporate network resources, some of our legacy apps, as well as Office 365, VSTS, and other cloud resources. We use multi-factor authentication to all of our VSTS accounts. In fact, we use multi-factor authentication to everything nowadays. You know, it's not just VSTS account. Everything, you know, hey, username and password is not sufficient anymore. And we use, so there are, in VSTS, there are around 35 feature teams. There are around 400 people working in VSTS. So we have a lot of, you know, we have set up our structures, we have teams, and teams have their own groups. So the way we manage permissioning is through Azure AD groups. So we have an Azure AD group for our team. Anybody who joins the team, all we have to do is simply add the individual to the Azure AD group. Then you get all the access that you need. And we plan our work. We plan our sprints. We plan our features, epics, user stories, tasks. We manage our bugs. We manage our incidents, you know, LiveSite incidents. We manage our deployment, you know, process, work items, everything in VSTS. Our entire backlog is in VSTS. We don't use any other tool outside this. We host, our code is actually hosted in VSTS Git repos. We build our code using, you know, VSTS build systems. And we use our own release management orchestration to release to production. We follow a ring model. You know, we have multiple, what we call multiple rings of deployment. We have ring zero, ring one, ring two, the customer account. So our accounts are in ring zero, which means we always go and deploy first to ring zero, which means we are always the first ones to actually get the new things first. We dog food that, we use it, we provide immediate feedback before we start releasing it to other rings, especially to external customers. So we use it, you know. Everything that we ship, the first teams to use this is the VSTS team. But if you're one of the customers who's interested in, hey, I want to be in that ring zero with you guys, I don't mind, you know, getting things early. You know, I want to get some of these features a week earlier than other customers. Sure, can sign you up. We are an agile team. And if some of you have attended the session given my colleagues, you know, a couple of days ago, I believe, yesterday or day before yesterday, they probably talked about the transition as a VSTS team, you know, how we transitioned, you know, to the new world of DevOps and what DevOps mean to us and what kind of cultural shifts that we have to go through. So we work on a 3-week sprint model. So every 3 weeks, you know, our sprints are 3 weeks. End of third week, we take it to production. The fourth week, the next sprint starts, and it's an ongoing process. In fact, today, I believe, is week two of sprint 107. So it never stops. It never stops for anything. There's no holidays. You know, it's keep on going. The only difference we do is if we are, let's say, you know, if our sprints are ending, let's say, on Christmas times, let's, you know, December 25th, we postpone the deployment maybe, you know, a couple of times, a couple of sprints, we say, okay. But the work is always happening. It's a continuous delivery work from our side. And that's what we have been following for the last 2 years. Three-week sprints. First week is each team actually goes and does their planning and create a bunch of user stories, which are aligned to the features that we have prioritized. And engineers will take those user stories, break down into tasks. But we give each team the autonomy they need. If tasks is something that your team needs, use it. If you don't need to use tasks, don't use it. And all sprints end of third week, sprint ends. There is no, you know, can we extend the sprint? Nope. Sprint ends and end of third week, and we always deploy, you know, the fourth week. To facilitate all that, you know, the way we do it is all of us sit in what we call an open space. So my team and I, you know, there are like 10 people. We sit in the same room. We don't schedule meetings to talk to us. You know, we are always available. You know, if somebody has a question, they're like, hey, just raise the hand and holler. Here's my question. And the advantage is any question, any discussion, everybody hears. Everybody shares. We also follow a model that one person from our team for every week is called a DRI, which is a designated responsibility individual. So any customer issues that comes during the week, any life site issues, that person's full-time job is to take care of that. Especially when you operate a hosted service, you know, we always have to be nimble. And we use the DRI model for our resources to be able to nimbly respond to customer issues. We are a huge team. I told you that there are 450 people in our team, or close to. 350 plus engineers writing code every day. How do we do that? It's challenging. Well, we use Git. We have a single master. And week one of the sprint, you know, everybody based on the work that they were going to do, they just create their own topic branches. They go work on their branch, and then when they're ready to check in, they go create a pull request. We have branch policies that says any code that you check in has to be at least approved, at least reviewed and approved by three people in our team. So you go, you know, create a topic branch, you make your changes, you add your unit test and any other additional test that you need, and then you create a pull request to get it reviewed and merged into that. The advantage is at any point of time, you're only, you know, dealing with a small amount of changes. So if there is a problem, it's always easy to go back, you know, what caused the problem. So every check-in goes to the master. When we are ready, on the fourth week, when we are ready to release to production, what we do is we go create a new release branch. And then that release branch is what we build it and deploy it to production. And when we have to go, you know, make some bug fixes, from hard fixes on the code that we just released, we do the same thing. We create a small topic branch from master. We go make those bug fixes. We check into master first. And then we actually check into the release branch and then let that hard fix go to production. The reason we do that is if you go check into the release branch, you know, you may forget sometimes to check into master. And what happens is the next sprint comes in, the hard fix that you just deployed is being overwritten by master because somebody forgot to check into master. So to avoid that, we always check into master. So this is how, you know, we, the VSTS team, actually, you know, develop VSTS. And if you're using our hoster service, you know, than our on-prem product, you know, you are seeing features every 3 weeks. Every 3 weeks, new features are coming from all these teams. You know, work items, you know, version control, build, release. Okay, so great. I learned about some of the great controls that you have. Fantastic. I've got a little bit more confidence now because VSTS team is using everything that VSTS team is producing. Great news. Now I'm ready to go create some VSTS accounts. How do I do that? Well, based on, you know, how our customers have used VSTS, you know, we have gathered a set of different customer scenarios. And if you're ready to make the jump today, you know, if, you know, I've talked to a lot of customers in the last few days, and some of them are, I'll go create a VSTS account today. Great. Hopefully, you know, you will fit into any one of these customer scenarios based on what we have seen in VSTS. And hopefully this will help you. First one. A business unit in the company decides to use VSTS. We have seen that, you know, our adoption always starts small, and then it grows big, actually. So a small business unit is in the company says, I want to use VSTS. A bunch of developers are excited. But you don't have any assets in the cloud yet, you know. You are thinking about the cloud, but you don't have assets in the cloud yet. And you want to use, VSTS features like you want to use work item tracking for your backlog management, you want to use our repos for version control, you want to use our continuous build, integration, CI/CD pipelines for deployment. Great. And I'll manage my, you know, this business unit is going to manage the account. There is no central IT team because we're small. We're just starting small. But I don't want to be bothered by too much of this maintenance activities, you know. I want to keep it as minimum as possible. I want to start being productive from day one. Can I do that? Sure. If you are in this category, I want to use VSTS. I don't have cloud assets yet, but I want to get it done quickly. The guidance for you is you have to use consumer identities to quickly set it up. So go create a VSTS account, sign in with your Microsoft account and, you know, MSA, and and go create a VSTS account connected with your MSA. You can actually, if you go to visualstudio.com and if you go through, if you go create a VSTS account, you can actually get an account created with the repo set up, with a team project set up, within less than a minute, actually. Within a minute, everything is set up, ready to you. You, the person who is trying to create this account, the Microsoft account identity is set up as the owner of this account, and you're ready to go. And you now can go and invite other users quickly to your account, invite them to your account to collaborate. So you can start being productive, you know, like a few minutes, actually, of creating your VSTS account. One thing to remember, as I said before, you know, avoid creating your MSAs the same as your work email addresses. Because what's happening is, this is what is happening, you know. This is a guidance that apparently we gave to customers a long time ago. So we are complicit in this too. But as these companies, so for example, you know, Joe at contoso.com went and created a Microsoft account with Joe at contoso.com. Now Contoso decided that they're going to go adopt Office 365. So they're going to move their domain to Office 365. They are now connecting their on-prem AD to Azure AD. Then now you have a problem. Is Joe at contoso.com an ARG ID, which is owned by your work or school, or is it your personal ID, right? So what the Azure AD team is now doing is, if your company has an Azure AD or Office 365 on the cloud, they will actually stop you from doing this. And the last week, I was dealing with a scenario where a customer is trying to create, he has a small team, they're trying to create MSAs for five people with their work IDs, and they didn't realize that their company is actually on the parallel. Somebody in their company is working with Microsoft and setting up Office 365 and Azure AD. And as they were trying to create these MSAs, and three people have done that, and the fourth one was trying to do, and then the Azure, and then the MSA, Microsoft account simply said, you can't do it anymore. And they were confused. I was doing it yesterday. Well, till yesterday, you know, you didn't have an account in, you didn't have your presence in the cloud. Now you have, your domain is in the cloud right now. You can't do it anymore. So this is a practice we tell our customers to avoid it. Second one. Okay, same scenario. Business unit is trying to, you know, in the company wants to use VSTS. They want to use the same set of features like the scenario one, except that they're like, you know, security is important to us. I don't think we want to do consumer identities. I can go to Azure AD. I can create my own domain. I can create some 5-6 users in Azure AD, and I can use that. And we have seen that in the past. Customers do this also, you know. We have a customer who went and created an Azure AD just for VSTS, actually. But if you do that, you know, it's your responsibility to go, you know, create those users into Azure AD, manage, you know. If you want multi-factor authentication, you have to do all that. But if you do that, you still have to, you know, keep in mind that this is still different from your on-prem. And if you ever decide to move to the cloud, there's going to be a challenge because now you have a sign-in address with a complete sign-in address, different address, and when your company moves to the cloud, moves to Azure AD, you have to use that. At some point of time, you're going to hit this challenge. But that's in the future, but if you want to really do that, you can go set it up today. So what you do is, you go set up your Azure AD first in this scenario, create a user account for you, log in with that user account, and then go create a VSTS account. If you do that, what happens is this VSTS account is now tied to the directory that you just created. What that means is you can only invite users who are part of the directory. But, you know, as we talked earlier, you know, with the Azure B2B model, you can invite partners and other users to your directory. So that's available. So points to remember, yes, if at some point of time your company decides, hey, we're going to get our domain moved to Azure AD, then you have to do some kind of a convergence process. You have to converge your identities at that point. And that is the scenario we will also take a look at that. The scenario three is pretty good, actually. It's a great scenario. Your company already has Office 365 or some other cloud assets, and you already have Azure AD. You want to use single identity to access, you know, Office 365 and VSTS. So in that case, it's simple. You know, sign in with your, you know, Azure AD. Sign in with your Office, you know, sign-in address, whatever that you're using. Let's say joe@contoso.com, and go create a VSTS account. And in this case, your VSTS account, as well as your Office 365, they're all connected to the same directory, which apparently, I hope, is your company directory, because you are also setting up things like Azure AD Connect, thinking your on-prem and cloud directories. And once you do that, once you connect your VSTS account to your company's Azure AD, you can invite anybody in your company. So you're not restricted. You know, anybody in your company, broader company, if you have 30,000 users in your company, they're all in Azure AD, you can invite anybody to your account to collaborate. Of course, you know, if you still want to support the partner collaboration scenario, I mean, your options are you still have to get that user added to your directory for them to work with you. So the first three scenarios are new scenarios. This is a new customer, you know, hey, I don't have any VSTS accounts, and I want to go create new. So you have three different, if you fit into three different buckets, you can use the recommendations there to go create your account. Now the fourth one is, you're an existing customer, you know. A few months ago, you know, a small team in your company started using VSTS. There was no cloud presence for your company, so you created your account using Microsoft account, and you invited other MSAs or Live ID users to your account, and you have been working. Now your company has got Azure AD. Now your company is telling that, hey, anybody who is using this personally connected accounts, you guys all have to move to the directory-backed account, because this is all company asset. So how can I do that? Simple. You can, if you are in that scenario, you could go to Azure portal today and you could connect or link your MSA-backed VSTS account to a directory. And the directory in this case is the directory that, you know, that your company owns, then you belong to. There's a couple of steps you need to follow to do that. First, either you can do that or you can talk to your administrator to do that, because first, when your company sets up Azure AD, they have also set up an Azure subscription, which is the payment method for Azure. So you, who is trying to do this, also need to be a co-admin of the subscription. Sometimes, you know, your administrator is okay to add you as a co-admin. Sometimes they won't. In that case, you need somebody else's help in your company to go do that. The other thing to keep in mind is, let's say that you've been working with VSTS, you have a lot of work items, you have a lot of code, history, with Microsoft accounts. For all these users to continue to get seamless access, even after you connect to the directory, you need to ensure that these MSA identities, they are added to your directory. And we already talked about how you can add them. But if you add them, then it's seamless. The only difference is now is, you know, your account is now connected to the directory, but you're still using a Microsoft account authentication model to authenticate to access your VSTS account. you can also talk to us. There are customers, you know, try to do this, and they face some challenges, you know. Talk to us, you know, if you need our help. You know, our support team can also help, you know, if you're trying to do this. This is the slight variation of scenario two. Scenario two, you know, you went and created your own Azure AD, and you connected your VSTS account to that Azure AD. Now your company has got their official Azure AD directory in the cloud. Now they are telling you, okay, please don't use yours, just move it. This is what we call, you know, moving from one directory to another. Unfortunately, we don't support this today. But, you know, we know, you know, we are, I have seen a couple of customers are in this scenario. We can help, talk to us. If this is an important scenario, if this is important to you, if you see this, come and talk to us. So in other words, you know, if you are in this scenario, you can't do it by yourself. You need to come to us, and we can help you with that. The last one. This is the reverse of four. In four, you moved from MSA to AAD. Now you want to come back to MSA. Well, we hope that you don't do that, because you don't want to move from a secure model back to a consumer identities. We hope you don't do that. But if you want to do that, you can do the same through Azure Portal. As you went to the portal and as you linked your MSA-backed account to a directory, you can also unlink that. You can also remove the directory backing. But for customers, especially enterprise customers who cares about security, we tell them, don't do it. It's not a good idea. This is a question I get from customers who have been so used to, you know, our on-prem product TFS, and they're moving into the cloud. And in the on-prem world, you have a single TFS instance. You can create as many collections as you can. And in this case, let's say a collection represents a business unit, a business unit's work. Transition that to VSTS, we have an account. An account has a single collection. And soon we are collapsing the concept of an account has a single collection into one. So account and collection will be merged into one soon. So their question is, okay, I had 10 collections in my on-prem. Should I go create 10 different VSTS accounts, or should I go create 10 team projects within the account? Well, the answer is it depends. Let's assume that, you know, in either cases, whether you want to create a VSTS account or a separate VSTS account or a team project, the assumption is, let's say, you know, your account or team project represents a department, right? A business unit or a department. But if you're a department who manages your own budget, and you want to have your own build resources, your build methodologies are different from other business units, then maybe you want to have your own account, not just team project. Because if you have a team project, in team projects, all the team projects in the account shares billing, shares build agents. But if you want something just dedicated for your business unit, you might want to go create a VSTS account in that case. Accounts represents a really a strong isolation boundary. For example, you can say, I want to go create account A in US. I want to go create account B in Europe and account C in Asia. So you are, you know, physically, you know, hosting your account in different regions. But as team projects, is what we call logical isolation. But all team projects within the account, they sit in the same region. They sit in the same scale unit, as we call. So if you require strong isolation, go create an account. If you don't require strong isolation, create a team project. The other reason where customers wants to go with separate accounts is they have legal reasons. They are a subsidiary of a big company, and they have to keep their assets in a specific region. Like, hey, I'm a subsidiary in Europe, and I want to keep all of my data just in Europe. In that case, you have to go create an account. Your team projects won't work in that case. Especially in a scenario where you have one team projects, you have one set of assets you need to keep in US, another set of assets in Europe or Asia or South America. The other reason is policies. When you want to roll out different policies, each department has their own policy. Because, for example, we talked about the app access policies and security policies, right? Whatever policy you set at the account, it impacts all team projects. So all team projects have to adhere to that policy. But if you have a scenario where my business unit can allow enabling, let's say, basic authentication, my business unit doesn't want basic authentication, then you need to go with different accounts. Sometimes it's different people. Hey, my business unit, all the work in my business unit needs to be completely, I don't want anybody else to access this. I want a specific set of administrator to go manage this. In that case, you know, you want to go create an account than a team project. We already talked about financial separation. If you want to, if you're a business unit, you want to manage their own billing, you know, their own budget, you know, and you don't want to share that budgets with other business units, you may want to go with accounts. Because this is a question we get asked all the time. Hey, what should we do? Should we go create accounts or team projects? And our answer is always, it depends. Do you have any of these scenarios? If you can go practically answer these yourself. If you have check, then yeah, I need to go create a separate account, not a team project. And if you are one of the customers who checked all the top ones and went and created, you know, 10 team projects, then you end up with this. I have a whole bunch of VSTS accounts now. Okay. How am I going to manage that? We at Microsoft have tens of thousands of VSTS accounts. They're all connected to our directory. Each individual in VSTS has, you know, 10, 20 accounts, actually. It's a big nightmare. This is what we heard from you. You know, a lot of customers who went and created these multiple accounts, they came and told us, hey, if I have 20 accounts and if I want to go set a policy, now I have to go to each and every account, each and every one of these 20 accounts and go set a policy. And that's not a nice thing. I mean, that's a lot of work. And if I have to change it, I have to go change everywhere. The other challenge is, other feedback that we heard from our customers is, if you're not using our subscriptions, let's say the Visual Studio subscriptions or the old MSDN subscriptions, and if you go get a basic license to use VSTS, the basic license is limited to the account that you get it for. But there are, if your company has 10 accounts, there are always cases where a single user may have to go work in multiple accounts. A single architect has to go and, you know, review check-in code in multiple accounts. And what does that mean? Which means the single user, every unique account the user goes to, they need to have a separate license. So what is happening is, for a single individual, you're paying 5 licenses to go access 5 accounts. That's not a nice thing. And then if you are in this model where you created your company went and created a lot of VSTS accounts, sometimes they don't even know how many such accounts exist, how many accounts are connected to the directory. Because in my team, we have 5 people. Each one went and created our own accounts. And then we have our company account. And each business unit went and created the account. And if you are an administrator who is thinking about, you know, securing your VSTS code assets, this is a nightmare scenario for you because you don't even know. We are working on this, you know. We are working on a feature called organization support that is going to address this particular pain. The reason that I wanted to talk to customers about this is a scenario I hear a lot from customers, and especially if you're an on-prem customer and who is looking to move into the cloud, this question is a big question on your mind, so we wanted to give you some information that we certainly recognize this problem. We are working on addressing this problem. The way we plan to address is, you can now bring all of these accounts under organization, under a concept called organization. And once you do that, you can go set policies at the organization level instead of going and setting policies at 20 different accounts. And once you set a policy at the organization, you can enforce the policy across all accounts. Or you may not, you know, you may not want to enforce it. That's up to you, you know. But if you want to enforce it, you can do it at one place for all these 20 accounts or 10 accounts that are part of your organization. You can also roam with a single license now. The scenario where I talked to you earlier, where a user has to go get 5 licenses to go access 5 different accounts, though they're all connected to the same directory. In this scenario, you can get a single license for that account. And as long as all of these accounts are within that org or organization, you don't need a separate license. You can just roam with your paid license, go to account A, account B, account C, and access the account without having to get another license. And finally, you also have a way to discover, you know, what accounts that your organization has created. Your peers, the members of your Active Directory, Azure Active Directory has created. You have a way to discover them and eventually, you know, bring them under this umbrella. So this is certainly, we are working on that. You know, we will provide more information. We published this information in our blogs a few months ago, and we continue to provide updates on, you know, how this is going on through that blog. There are some important links, you know. Some of the information I talked about, data security, our security guarantees, our service guarantees, they're there in the white paper. They're there in a lot more detailed way, so helpful to you. So I hope that, you know, this session has helped you, whether you are an existing VSTS customer or whether you are a customer who's ready to make the jump to VSTS, or you're still a customer who is still thinking, yeah, I'm not sure, cloud, but it's good to know. Whatever you know, category that you are in, I hope that, you know, some of the information we presented today, you know, is helpful to you. So thank you, everybody. And I know everybody has their bags and getting ready to, you know, catch their flights, and you all have a safe flight, and I will do the same. And I'll be here for a few more minutes. If you have any questions, please, you know, you can use the mic to ask me questions, or you can come up over here. Sure.
The concept of organization sounds like it could have an interesting use case in the TFS world as well as VSTS. Is that something on your roadmap?
To be very frank, you know, by introducing organizations, we are actually bringing parity to TFS. You have a TFS instance, and you can look at the organization as something similar to a TFS instance. Under the TFS instance, you have a lot of collections. Here, collections equivalence is account, then you have a lot of accounts under an organization.
Gotcha.
So we already have that in the on-prem world.
Okay.
Yeah. Thank you. Sure. You may use the mic, you know. Or I'll repeat the question. No, don't worry.
Do you often get a question about restricting access to on-prem or so developers access
you don't want to?
Right.
Yeah.
Because of, you know,
yeah. So let me repeat the question. So I do not want my developers to access source code or VSTS repos from home. How can I prevent that? Well, with VSTS, assuming if you already have set up Azure AD, you can set up a conditional policy in Azure AD and say, if you are coming from outside your corporate network, you can simply deny access. So when they try to log into VSTS and we send them to Azure AD to authenticate, Azure AD is going to look up its conditional policy, and the policy says, if you're outside the corporate network, if you're not within the IP ranges, I'm going to deny you. So once you set up that conditional policy, they won't be able to come to VSTS and access that.
So if I'm using a federated provider, then I can do it that way?
Which federated provider you're using? I believe so, yeah. I mean, in this case, you have to control and set up the conditional access at the federated level. It is not in VSTS, but it's in Azure AD. Since, you know, the gateway to VSTS is always through an Azure AD authentication model, so when you come to us, we send it to them first, and if they deny you access, you can never come back to us. Yeah. But one point to keep in mind is, if you want to do that, you may want to disable basic authentication. Because what we do today is, when you create basic authentication, our PATS, we actually enforce things like multi-factor authentication at the time of issuance, not at the time of usage. So if somebody has already set it up and then you go set up the policy later, it still doesn't impact their tokens. You know, with the tokens, they can still use to come from their home or outside your corporate network. So in that case, you may want to go revoke all the existing ones. Sure.
So you have a 3-week sprint cycle.
Mm-hmm.
And you've got your deploy to production outside of that sprint.
Yep.
How do you manage that on your team if it's work that's outside the sprint? Who's actually doing that work?
Yeah. Great question, actually. So I talked to you about the DRI model, the designated response individual. In addition to the DRI, we also have a representative from each team who will serve as a deployment driver. We call them deployment drivers. So the week one of next sprint, when we were all working on deploying to production, sometimes individuals from every team or individuals from a group of teams will work together. They'll look at what is going to be the deployment criteria, what are the bugs, how many of them are blocking bugs. So this group of people for that particular week will work together purely on deployment activities. They won't be actually working on any features or user stories in that week. So that's how we were able to do that. So, yeah. Please, yeah. The question is, you know, can I have multiple agents, right? Multiple deployment agents, hosted agents. I don't know the answer to the question on the top of my head. You can send me an email. My email address, you can find that in the Ignite app, and I'll connect with the deployment team and respond back to you. Can you time?
In Azure AD, we have a lot of consultants that will work for us, and they will come on or off the project. And it would be nice to say, we haven't been on the project for a month, and we hired you for 2 months. Like right now, we just let them use their MSAs.
So the question is, can we time limit guest users? Because we want them to come in and work for a certain period of time, and after the period of time, they need their access to be automatically, they need to be gone from the directory. I believe so. I believe Azure AD, because we do that today, and I don't know exactly how we do that, but I'm pretty sure that Azure AD, you can go set up a time period validity for an identity. So the question is, how can I move work items? And I have thousands of work items. How can I move the work items from one instance of VSO to another instance? In other words, we have also heard this from customers. Sometimes they want to move work items from one team project to another. The way that you do it, the answer is there is no direct way to do that. But we expose all of your work items through REST APIs. So you could potentially, create your own code that actually goes and reads all of your work items and then inserts that work items into another VSO instance. And you could do that. And we have a growing marketplace today. So as you know, if you go to marketplace.visualstudio.com, we publish, extensions to marketplace. A lot of third-party developers are continuing to publish new extensions to the marketplace. And I'm pretty sure that somebody already have created an extension that could do this for you. And if you don't have one, then you could still write a code and you could leverage our REST APIs to do that. Because our REST API supports both read into work items, creating work items. We also have service hooks, and I don't know if service hooks in this case is gonna be helpful. We have service hooks, we have web hooks. Maybe not the ones that are already there, but you can create a web hook, and the web hook, you could go create your own listening service on your side, and anytime a change happens on VSDS, let's say a work item gets updated, a work item gets created, it actually sends that information to the listener, and then your listening service can read that and can call the REST APIs to publish that to another VSO account, another VSDS account. So not a direct way, but you can still do that, yeah. You're welcome. So I'm officially out of time, so thank you very much, and I hope you all had a great Ignite 2016, and we hope to see you next year in Ignite 2017. Thank you.